Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for investors and business owners looking to save on taxes and build long-term wealth with Toby Mathis, an attorney, author, business owner, and a featured instructor at Anderson's Tax and Asset Protection event held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Hey guys, this is Toby Mathis, and you can see my buddy Jeff there. He's not doing so good. He's up against the tax deadline, so I'm just trying to give you guys a visual depiction of what he looks like right now. Whoops, that's not so good. Actually, this isn't entirely accurate. I got to give him a little bit of drool. This is what happens to all the accountants around tax time. So, in case you didn't know, October 15th, somebody says Sunnyside. That's about right. That's about right. Yeah, all right. Jeff's having a rough day. Jeff is up against the deadline. So Jeff's doing great, actually. I told him, I said, dude, I'll take this. I love chatting with people. And since you guys can do it, we'll have some fun with it. And is your smile a smirk? Kind of. You guys are starting to figure me out here. All right. So we have questions coming in already. Wow, you guys are already active. But we'll get to that. That's not wrong. I'm a very good drawer. I feel like American Idol, where like the kid gets up and they say they can sing because their mom told them that they could sing. And you know they can't sing. And everybody else like is sitting there holding their breath going, oh, I can't wait for that kid to figure out that they can't sing. Well, my mom told me I could draw. All right. So Tax Tuesday rules. Ask live and we will answer before the end of the webinar. We have a team on. We have Elliot Thomas. We have Patty Peary, Susan Nicholas, Avia Harder, and moi. And you could ask your questions and they'll be jumping all over it. And we'll make sure that we can get you. Real quick, somebody's asking, why won't my accountant allow me to write off all my 1231 losses this year? And Jim, that's a capital loss. And capital losses can be used to offset capital income. So you have to have long-term capital gains and short-term capital gains to use up that loss. Otherwise, you get to take $3,000 against your other income sources and carry it forward. Doesn't that stink? So you make $1 million one year, lose $1 million the next. There's a good chance you'll be paying tax on $1 million and not getting to write off the $1 million the next year. It's kind of weird how it works, but that's exactly how it does. So don't lose money in the stock market, guys. It's like, it's not fair rules. It'll beat you up. Tax Tuesday questions, and you guys are going to see me drawing because when it's just me, Jeff can't keep me away from the pen like he likes to. So we're going to feel free to send us questions. If you need a detailed response, you really do need to be a platinum client. It's not expensive. It's $35 a month. There is a sign-up fee, but we have numerous programs to allow you to avoid that sign-up. Evade's a bad word, I guess, in the tax world. Avoid the sign-up fee. No, we'll package it up with something else. And then this is fast, fun, and educational. We want to give back and help educate. This is good stuff, guys. It's always fun to talk taxes. Feel free to banter with me if you feel like it on this, because anybody who knows what's going on in the tax world knows that Biden has put some stuff out. He's a little bit evasive, and Trump hasn't really put anything out. So when we talk about Trump's tax plan, we're really talking about the continuation of the Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017, which became active right at the end of that year. And it sunsets. A lot of the provisions sunset in 2025, but in 2022 to 2025, you have sunsets. So Trump's tax stuff is really a continuation and making permanent a lot of those provisions, including in 2022, for example, your accelerated depreciation, which so many accountants love, drops down to 80% for a couple of years, then goes to 60%, then goes away, starts to phase out, in other words. So let's see if we can make that. So we'll go over that as an opening question. Somebody wrote, since I am doing this by myself, I was grabbing a few that were really interesting to me. Should I file bankruptcy on my business if I owe the IRS $1 million in back payroll taxes, or should I try and offer and compromise and continue operating the business to pay back what is agreed on? We'll answer that. If I own a commercial building in the name of my LLC and engage in a 1031 exchange, can my replacement party be purchased in a tenant, really in a as a tenant in common arrangement? And yeah, we've done a bunch of those. I'll go over that, what the rules are. Does placing real estate in solo 401k allow full use of the real estate tax benefits? We'll answer that one. Great questions. Love those types of questions. In order to have losses from an active business be counted as active losses, do you have to work 500 hours in a year in the business? I just formed my active business in September. So like, how would I hit that 500 hours? Well, answer that. Can you describe the best strategy for selling that's employee stock purchase plan shares obtained at a discounted rate? Do you always wait for it to be considered a qualifying disposition, or do that only when stock has gone up in value during the purchasing term? This is such a cool question. I'm going to give it a smiley face because I don't get to answer those very often. It gets really complicated. So it'll give us a chance to kind of go over that and educate some people that may be in these arrangements and not even know what it is. I've made some good money trading cryptocurrency. This puts me in the highest tax bracket. Is there a way to reduce my tax liability? You've come to the right place. So we'll go over that. I am a limited partner in a hedge fund through a Wyoming holding company. How can I deduct the management fees? Great question. Some of you guys know that this is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act that is causing this issue. But wait, I thought that the taxes went down. Individual taxes went up when you look at the numbers and how much was actually collected. Two reasons, which we'll get into. All right. My wife and I have W-2 jobs and are also renting out three rental properties. Those three properties are owned by our three LLCs, one property per LLC. What tax benefits are there if we form a C Corp on top of those three LLCs to act as a property management company? What if my wife quits her W-2 job and becomes a real estate professional? I love questions like that. That's a good question. It's forward thinking. And just as an aside on that type of question, by the way, we've actually had folks, if you understand how a real estate professional works, and we'll dive into this, but we've actually had people reduce the hours that they work and net more money because the reduction in the hours that they were working allowed them to qualify for certain tax benefits. You guys will get that when we go through it. It's a really weird thing to get your head around. Wait a second. I mean, I could work less and keep more? Yes. The tax world kind of incentivizes you to do smart things. Would the capital gains exclusion apply to a two-unit property where one unit is rented and the other unit we lived in? So you're a house hacker, right? For purposes of this question, say the property was purchased in 1999 for $500,000, and now it's valued around $2.5. Can we sell the property without paying capital gains? And if so, how? I like that question a lot. This deals with 121 and 1031 exchange. Yay, this is so exciting. So Jeff, you are missing out, brother, if you're listening to this at all. Look at this. Somebody says, is this going to start? I hope we started. We haven't. I'm just rattling on by myself. Hopefully you guys can hear me. All right, let's talk about our presidential candidates, President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden, who's running for Senate or president, depending on the day. I couldn't resist that, guys. Come on. You guys have to admit that that's pretty dang funny when you keep saying. All right. And there are some pretty big differences from a tax perspective. In fact, this is what somebody called me a nerd. That's just not nice. Well, actually, depends on what genre you're from in my world. That's like, yeah, we are listening intently. Thanks. All right. So let's jump into this. Individual rates. This is what's interesting. Trump did say he wanted to lower middle rates. So I'll show you guys kind of a chart. So he wants to lower middle rates. And then Biden wants to increase the top bracket to 39.6. He hasn't talked about the other brackets. He's kind of said, leave it all the same, which was what it was under the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. But the question is whether that's going to, so some of you guys have some pretty good questions. It's like watching paint dry. That's just not nice. Corporate rates. Trump is 21%. Biden wants to move that up to 28%. And I'll go over what the impact will be when we get into this. Dividends right now, dividends, qualified dividends are 0, 15, or 20%. If you understand net investment income tax, you could add 3.8 to this one. And so technically, the top capital gains rate really is, when you look at it, 23.8%. What happened here is under Biden, you'd still have that 23.8, but you'd also have what would that be? 39.6 plus 3.8. What would that be? 6, 8, 4. Something. See if I can do the math in my head. 39.6 plus 3.8. So you go 4, carry the 1, 13. Yay. So 43.4%. That would be your highest bracket. Anybody wants to play math with me, you guys can do that. So it's pretty heinous. And that's if you're over $1 million mark. Biden also wants to increase the child credits. He's talked about giving, you know, families some more money. Payroll taxes, Biden wants to, there's something called old age disability and survivors insurance, the Social Security side. He wants to add that back in at when you're over 400,000. And I'll show you guys a chart at 12.4%. So he wants to have a phase out, and the phase out's at 137,700, and then have it come back. And Trump wants to forgive OADSI for sure this year for what they, he kind of did in his executive order. He wants to say basically, hey, we were deferring and allowing you to pay your taxes, your employment taxes in 2021 and 2022 that you incurred in 2020. And we want to forgive those, is what he said. So there is something there. Estate taxes, he wants to keep and make permanent the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, which means $11 million plus of estate tax exclusion per person. And Biden wants to allow it to expire and go back down to around the 5 million mark. But he also wants to get rid of the step up in basis. He wants tax on death of appreciated assets. What does that mean? It means, let's say that you had stock. Oh, you can't even read my writing, can you? Expire, and I'm just going to say no step up. Ordinarily, when you die, your capital assets, the basis adjusts to the value on the date of passing. And if Biden's plan comes in place, he wants to eliminate that and make it taxable as though you sold it on the date that you passed. So his whole deal is like, hey, you would end up with lots more taxes coming in when people passed away because they don't have, they would have capital gains almost immediately on capital assets. Itemized deductions, some of you guys know that Trump got rid of them, so they're gone. You have your standard deduction, miscellaneous itemized deductions are gone. So I should say miscellaneous to be fair. The PEAS limitation went away. Biden wants to bring a version of that back in. So I'd say PEAS plus, which just means that you're going to have 3% of a limitation over a certain dollar amount. And I think they're talking $400,000. There's also a phase out of 199A is gone. You would get that after 400,000, which it already goes away for professionals, but for all businesses, it would go away. And then what was another big one I was trying to think of? I think that's the big one. And then itemized deductions for Trump, you have SALT. So that's right. So Biden would get rid of SALT. So no SALT, which is the state and local tax limitation. Right now there's a $10,000 limitation. So under Biden, that would go away. What Biden's really doing is saying, hey, for anybody under 400,000, we're going to let you have more deductions. And somebody asked, why is 400,000 the magic number? They just think that means you're rich if you're making more than 400,000. So I think they just picked it out of the air saying that we can demonize those that are making more than 400,000. I shouldn't say that. That sounds political. That they're going to tax at a higher rate the people that are making more because they believe that they're able to pay more. So this is the Social Security tax. This is the OADSI. This is 12.4%. And the employer pays half, 50-50. The employee pays half unless you're self-employed. It phases out right now, just that old age death and survivors insurance. The Medicare goes on forever. The Medicare, the 2.9 Medicare, does not have a phase out. That's just going on. But what happens is it used to be you'd go down to zero after you hit this phase out number. And all Biden's plan is going to do is say, hey, anything above 400,000, it comes back. You know, when you're looking at tax bracket, let's just be real and look at this. This is what would happen in 2021, assuming that Biden was able to change the laws, which he obviously can't. You know, I guess he could try in an executive order, but it would be the Congress would have to obviously do that, and he just wouldn't veto it. He would welcome it. What you really have is just the 35 and 37% going bye-bye. Again, anything over 400,000, you start getting this pain. And then another magic number is a million, and you're going to see where that comes in when we talk about capital gains. What does it really mean? It means here's the effective tax rate when you're talking about the income that flows through. You have 199A adjusting these numbers. you have Social Security or self-employment tax adjusting these numbers. So since we're talking about an S corp, we don't have to, we're just going to be talking about Social Security. But you can kind of look and see, all right, in the old days, you were pretty much done if you got to the point where you were maxing out your bracket. You had a little bit of an extra, but not much. With Biden, you're looking at about a, what is that, a 3.7% increase. And then where it really hurts is if you're making over in the 600,000 range, over half a million, really. And then you're talking about an 11.6% increase in tax. So again, let's just be real. Capital gains and dividend rates, and I kind of wish that they would just do this for us. Here's how much it'll go up. All right, it'll be up 2%. You know, most people probably wouldn't care too much. But, you know, when you start seeing 10% increases in an already tough year, you're like, hey, thanks. Maybe my business is just now reopening and, you know, and I have deferred business and everybody helps me. And I have a great beginning, of 2021. And I know I'm going to get slammed for it, you know. And then here's the dividends. When you're over that $1 million mark, this is where it gets crazy. You literally go from that 20 to that 39.6. Now, why is this important? Because your dividends is what you get out of the corporation. And so we would have a, you know, what we wanted to be is more competitive worldwide, and we wanted people to start doing business here. So you kind of see what Trump's plan did is, hey, really, he kind of capped it. He said, hey, if your company pays tax and you pay it out as a dividend, then you're looking at it going, hey, it's not, you're not getting murdered on it. You know, before it was 50% and that was too bad. Well, now we're going to go to 59%, which is what do you think is going to happen? And now remember, everybody who gets into this stuff, sometimes we get people that get a little edgy. Corporations don't really pay tax, because if they didn't pay it, they would pay out more. And how do we know that? Because personal incomes have gone up steadily over the last few years, and people are paying more in taxes than they were prior to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. Anyway, not going to argue with anybody. So Trump tax versus Biden, what you may want to be looking at. Here's the things that I'm looking at, and I'm telling our clients, some of you guys may be on the quarterly call coming up here in the next short period of time. I guess next week, actually. But we may be looking at gain harvesting, because remember, if you make $1 million plus, you're essentially going to be paying 100% more in tax. So you may be looking at the end of the year going, heck no, I'm going to sell off everything that has lots of gain in it. You may also want to do a Roth conversion. The rule there is if your bracket is going up, if your tax bracket goes up from where you are right now, then a Roth is usually a good idea. If your tax bracket's going to stay the same, then there it's equal. If your tax bracket is going to go down when you retire, then you're better off doing a deferred plan, like a regular 401k or a defined benefit or a traditional IRA. You also have the ability to do 100% charitable deduction this year in 2020. And the reason I say that is because depending on what your income is, you may not get much of a benefit. So for example, let's say you make $1 million under the Biden plan in 2021, they would remove 400,000 from that. That's their magic number. And you would have 600,000 times 3%, which equals 18,000. And you would take whatever your deductions are minus 18,000. And that's going to be what you're left with. And so if you wait, you may lose the benefit of the deduction depending on what your income is. And I know this is getting complicated. I just happen to look at this stuff and deal with it. And I can play with the numbers, but most people, this is like, it's like writing Greek, right? Just know that these are the things that we would look at, and everybody's situation is a little bit different, but you know, it's worth taking a gander depending on what you think your income's doing. Carry forward net operating losses. You have the chance, if you have a loss in 2018, 2019, or 2020, to either carry back for 5 years and then carry forward, or not and just carry forward. Why is that important? Because if I have a net operating loss in 2020, I may choose to carry it forward if I'm going to be in a really high tax bracket. So it makes sense to me. I might wait on harvesting losses. If I have positions that have lost, I may want to wait a week. If I'm going to be selling it, and I could sell it in December, I may want to sell it if I'm going to be in that 39.6% capital gains bracket. I may just want to wait and sell my losses in 2021. And then gifting, it's the use it or lose it type thing. If the estate tax is going to go away. And you'll know that probably in November and December, depending on who gets Congress and who has the Senate. We'll have an idea of what they're going to be able to push through. And again, I'm not being political. I'm just saying, let's, the reality is if Biden gets in, but he doesn't have Congress, then he's not going to be able to do much. If he does, then he's going to be able to do a lot of things, and you better be prepared. So we may want to say, hey, maybe we want to use up our gifting under the 11. I think we're at 11.8 million this year. If you are a high estate, we may want to look at that and say, hey, maybe these are things we look at. Speaking of things we look at, we did come out with the tax toolbox. This is the only time I'm going to bring it up today. It's $595. It is 20 different sections and about a 300-page workbook. It's pretty extensive. $595. If you don't want the physical, you could just do the e-version. It's $495. If you are interested in that, it's aba.link/toolbox. You can just go to that link. Now, why am I putting that up? Because nobody's going to take better care of your tax situation than you. It's good to have a guide that's helping you and giving you ideas. But at the end of the day, for every hour you're spending on tax planning, it should yield you about $1,000 of benefit. And that's kind of what I've seen over the years. So I get to say, hey, if you want to spend a few hours learning this stuff, you'll probably put a lot of money in your pocket. And that's on an annual basis. As a benefit, we'll also give you the TaxWise workshop coming up in November. Actually, it's December now. Forget the exact date. Patty may have it. Anyway, that's going to be a fun workshop where we go over tons and tons of stuff, but that's also included. So basically, you're getting a bunch of materials to help you understand taxes. Speaking of understanding taxes, let me just go and look at some. You guys have a ton of questions already. So there's a couple that I wanted to hit here before we jump forward. I'm going to see if there's anything. Somebody says, recent first-time home buyer, how does this affect my taxes for 2020? Any insights? Well, James, you're going to get to write on your mortgage interest and your real estate taxes that ordinarily you wouldn't have been able to do. So what you're going to end up doing is looking to see whether that's higher than the standard deduction. So you're going to have, the way it works is you have a standard deduction. And let's say that you're married filing jointly in 2020. I believe it's like $24,800. I think, I'm not looking at the chart. It's either that or $24,400. I always kind of forget. But then you're going to add up all your Schedule A or your itemized deductions, which is going to be your charity, your medical expenses that exceed a certain percentage. You're going to get to write off your mortgage interest, state taxes, mortgage, your state and local taxes. You add all those up and you're going to take whichever one is bigger. About 80% of the people right now take the standard. So it may impact you. It may not impact you. You certainly, it's worth calculating. We already answered about the taxes. Somebody's saying that I eat crayons and I play with Legos. You guys are mean. Questions about solo 401k. Can I roll that 2019 solo 401k money contributed to 2020? If I can't benefit from the contribution already in 2020? If yes, what form do I? I believe that if you made the contribution in, I think Elliot actually took a gander at this, and I agree. If you made the contribution in 2019, then you're stuck. But if you made the contribution since then, before the end of the tax year, I believe that you'd be, you could be categorizing it as a 2020. It all depends on when you actually did it. Somebody says, yeah, somebody has a bad accountant. Oh, look at all these cool questions. All right. So the questions are getting answered pretty good by our group. So I'm going to jump into some of the fun ones that we have just because this is so much fun. All right. So this is, you got to put your bankruptcy hat on. This is going to be the things are never as they seem. So bankruptcy, IRS debt. Can you bankrupt away IRS debt? Yes or no? And the answer is yes, income taxes. But when you're paying payroll taxes, they're actually on behalf of somebody else. And so when they say payroll taxes, you were supposed to pay that. That was somebody else's property that was supposed to go there, which means they call it theft when you don't pay it. And theft cannot be discharged in bankruptcy. And it gets worse. Not only is it not dischargeable in bankruptcy, but anybody who is a responsible party can be held responsible for the payroll taxes. So not only is it the company that's on the hook, but anybody who is in charge of payroll is on the hook, including any officer, director, or employee that was in charge of the payroll taxes. it could be really horrible. You never mess around with payroll taxes ever, ever, ever. And they even have cases where somebody popped out their Amex and paid payroll taxes on the Amex and then tried to bankrupt away the American Express. And the court said no, because you used it to pay somebody else's property, which means you robbed Peter to pay Paul, and we're not going to let you walk away from the debt that you owe to Peter. Isn't that wild? There's a few of them. Somebody says, does that apply to 1099 employees? No, because a 1099 infers that they're an independent contractor. So a 1099 is equal to not an employee. So this is only employment taxes. Employee. There we go. So yeah, you learn something new every day. EDD, unemployment. Yes, anything that was owed on behalf of somebody to another party, they can hold you responsible for. So all of the employment taxes, you would be held responsible for. Even though you're paying it on behalf of an employee, it sounds like it's just a bill, but it's not. They're going to say, hey, that was supposed to be removed and remitted directly to us. You didn't do it. Therefore, you robbed the employee. That's just the take, and it's pretty unforgiving. So I would say, if I had to choose between paying payroll taxes and just about anything else, I'm paying payroll taxes. And since we're on this topic, whenever we're talking about bankruptcy, that's the clean slate. So, and it's not necessarily a bad thing. Some people are like, oh, bankruptcy. Disney went bankrupt. And there's lots of successful people. Our president went bankruptcy. God knows, probably more than once. But it's there to allow you to take risk and then not be destroyed for the rest of your life as opposed to that risk. Even in our individual world, people don't realize that there's certain things that you can't bankrupt. Like you punch somebody in the head and you don't want to pay their medical bills, you can't bankrupt it. You did it on purpose. If you have student debt, you can't bankrupt it. That's a big thing. These people are getting into big debt. And I could take a credit card and come to Vegas and make really bad choices all weekend and run that thing up and do a whole bunch of dumb stuff. And I could bankrupt that bill. Yet if I go get a degree at an institution and I follow all the rules and I did everything great, and I just, because of bad, you know, just circumstances outside my control, I get COVID or a family member I'm taking care of and I can't pay it, I can't bankrupt it. So it's really kind of weird. Somebody says, I have a property. Have a property. Title is held personally. Want to do a like-kind exchange, but prefer to acquire in an LLC. Should we transfer to an LLC before selling? Is there a seasoning period? Roy, there really isn't a seasoning period. What I would do is say, if you already hold it personally, you got to go name to name. So you could go LLC. So you'd put the property in the LLC and then sell. But if you're going to sell it soon, you may just want to sell it individually and then buy individually and then transfer it into the LLC. I've never seen a problem when you buy first and then drop it. Where I see a problem is when there's a change of ownership right before a sale, and then they start to question whether or not it was two sales, if you get it. So somebody's asking another question. If owning my interest in a company through an LLC and the company files for bankruptcy, am I personally impacted? And it shouldn't impact you at all unless you are a personal guarantor and they come after you personally. Otherwise, the company's debts are not your debts. And we really saw that when the Great Recession hit. We had people that had created separate credit profiles for their companies where they had great credit. And we had people that didn't. And what we saw is that when the person who didn't got into trouble with their house, like invariably, these banks would say, skip a payment and then we'll negotiate with you and we'll do our loan modification. They would immediately ding your business credit and pull it and cancel your line of credit. We saw people with $3-4 million lines of credit that got destroyed because of that. And all of a sudden they can't operate. So it's okay to have business credit. Just make sure that it's not tied to your personal and that you're not a guarantor on it. Boy, you guys a couple of people just wrote me books. Jeez, you keep the questions so I can read them. Are 401k and IRA accounts protected from bankruptcy? There's certain amounts that are, and some of it depends on state law. Generally speaking, you're going to be okay. Somebody might not be able to force you into bankruptcy as well. They may not be able to attach it so they can go get their judgment. And I'm thinking of O.J. Simpson on that one. You know, he's never going to be able to bankrupt away everything, but they're not going to be able to capture the asset anyway. Here's another one. So this will be fun. If I own a commercial building in the name of my LLC and engage in a 1031 exchange, can my replacement property be purchased in a tenant in common arrangement? And the answer is yes. You have to go LLC to LLC. In other words, the same owner. And the tenant in common arrangement, cannot be a partnership. So we had a client that did this. They had really good counsel. They sold an apartment complex, and they basically wanted to park some money in some buildings. So they, you know, not an apartment complex, they sold a strip mall. And it was quite a bit of money. And if you guys know how commercial real estate goes, it's not like I can just clap my hands and magically sell and I know exactly what I'm going to do. It's a little bit different than that. So we have some timing issues, and the 180 days may be a big issue. So they park it in the tick, and they're parking it with the idea that maybe at some point they're going to sell that tick and acquire a final interest in something else, but they're giving themselves a lot of time to be able to do it. And so you could 1031 exchange and 1031 exchange and 1031 exchange. Somebody says, I owe the IRS $100,000 and cannot pay it. I want to start an assisted living, but want to resolve this somehow. Help. This is a personal, not a corporate debt. Yep. So you can actually bankrupt that. There's requirements on making sure that you have filed your returns and that you continue to file them, but you can actually bankrupt that away so that you could start something else. Again, the bankruptcy laws are there to give you a fresh slate, not to hammer you. And a lot of folks don't realize that income taxes can be bankrupted away. Worst case scenario is, and I didn't touch on this, when you guys were, let me go back to my payroll tax. I'm just going to jump back into that. The one thing that I would say is if you could go bankrupt on it, the main debt, and I would do a Chapter 11 if it's a business, individual possibly as well, or a 13 where I'm doing a payment plan. And the only reason I'm doing these here is because I may not want to have to pay the penalties or interest. In other words, I can't get rid of the main debt, but if payroll taxes, the penalties can be pretty severe. And if the penalties are so severe that they're preventing me from being able to move forward, then I might look at going bankrupt just for that. I may not be able to get rid of that. I could basically make a payment plan. But something he was talking about there was the offer and compromise and continue to run the business. Continue to run the business and engage with the IRS and start talking about getting rid of some of those onerous penalties and keep them off you if possible. Does placing real estate in a solo 401k allow full use of the real estate tax benefits? So the real estate tax benefits really come down to depreciation, and that's depreciation of the improvement on the property. Do you use depreciation in a solo 401k? And the answer is no, you're not going to get that benefit. And the basis is really going to be, I believe you're looking at a basis on the property of zero. So do you get any benefit, tax benefits? No. You got a deduction for placing it in there. So if you put money in, so if placing real estate, generally speaking, you're probably putting in cash, and then the cash, you use the cash to buy the property. And you got a deduction on that. So you deducted it once already when you put the cash in. Now that you're buying it, are you going to get a double benefit? The answer is no. What I oftentimes get into arguments with some of the folks that do the IRAs is, I will say this, this is a solo 401k. So you don't have something called unrelated debt financed income. No UDFI in a 401k, but yes, UDFI in an IRA. And the reason this is important is because you would use the depreciation to make sure that you're not paying UDFI if you have debt in the 401k. If that just went over some of your guys' heads, I apologize. All I'm saying is that if you have debt, you're buying real estate with debt, do it in a 401k because there's no hidden taxes. You do that in an IRA, you have hidden taxes, and then we would use the depreciation to make sure that we offset those taxes. But when you have to pay the money out, that's the problem because it's ordinary income. And so at some point, I'm going to have to pay that real estate out, and I could be paying myself partial interest, but it has a dollar value that I'm having to pay tax on. Sometimes what we say, it's going to be better to convert your 401k over, you know, depending on what you're doing over your lifetime, that maybe you do partial conversions to a Roth. And so maybe we don't want to have to be forced to take distributions. So we may roll some of those monies into a Roth at some point, depending on what's going on. Somebody says, when you have a self-directed IRA, can you explain how you operate tax-free and get funds in and out. Okay, so it's an IRA. So in order to put money in an IRA, you're gonna have to follow the rules as far as the how much you can put in and how much you can deduct. So putting money in means I'm looking at it, maybe I'm putting in $5,000, $6,000 a year. I could be doing a defined benefit plan and dumping a whole bunch in and rolling it into an IRA. I could be doing a 401k and dumping, you know, $37,000 or $57,000 a year into it. If I take money out, it's going to depend on whether it's a traditional or a Roth. If it's a traditional IRA or a traditional 401k or defined benefit plan, I'm going to have required minimum distributions, which is ordinary, which means I'm going to pay tax as I take it out. And you're going to start that at age 72. If you're a Roth, you don't have to take it out, but you never got a tax benefit for putting it in the first place. So the way these things generally work is they give you, if they give you a tax benefit, it's deferred. So I could get a deduction putting money into a into my IRA. Well, I know I'm going to pay that at some point in the future. It may be that it's I'm waiting until I'm 72, maybe 73, 74. And it comes down to about 4% a year that you're taking out that I'm having to pay tax on. But I get a deduction right now. So I'm getting a nice benefit. Realistically, I wouldn't say do real estate in an IRA. And self-directed IRAs, again, they're neat and all, but if you're doing real estate, do it in a 401k. Just because you're in control, you don't have to worry about a custodian and you don't have to worry about UDFI. And if I make a mistake, it's far less painful, because in a 401k, if you make a mistake, it just, that portion becomes taxable. In a IRA, if you make a mistake, usually the whole thing is corrupted and they tax you on the whole IRA. Somebody says, can we also live in a short-term rental home under an LLC, and how does it work at tax time? I'm not sure what that means. I'm just going to jump onto this. I might come back onto that one, Amy. All right. In order to have losses from an active business be counted as active losses, do you have to work 500 hours in a year? No. You have to materially participate, you, if you're going to be taking that deduction on your return. In other words, there's two types of businesses. So if I am a business, I am either going to be active, what do you think the other side is, or passive. And passive means no material participation. Active equals I materially participated. So it's not really 500 hours. It's material participation is any one of, I think there's nine different tests. And it's not something where you have to worry about that hourly. The only time you're worried about hourly, that you really want to be keeping track of your hours, like I'm talking about that you have to, is when you're dealing with real estate professional. And that's because you have to keep contemporaneous logs and you have to do 750 hours plus it has to be more than 50% of your time, your personal service time. So you have to hit that 750 hours. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts on that one. So we want to make sure you're documenting. Somebody says, how does the IRS like to see hours recorded, notebook, spreadsheet? Roy, I would do it on your phone. What they care about is there a log? And I would get into something where it's really easy, like in your calendar. And also, if you just email yourself at the end of the day, you could do something like that, or you could just put it on there. And then somebody asks, is it possible to open a 401k before the 10/15 deadline? The 401k wouldn't help you. You know, it's you're not going to be able to put money in it. The only accounts where you could still put money in from last year would be a SEP IRA for a business, or if you already had a 401k in place and you were contributing for last year and you hadn't filed your tax return on your business, which realistically, I don't think that's possible now. Maybe if it was a sole proprietorship that was sponsoring a 401k, the business could still make a contribution. But you're down to the nitty gritty. What you can do, by the way, and this is before October 15th, if you are a real estate and you have real estate income, you can cost seg before, it's called a 3115 change of accounting, and you would do a cost segregation. And you could still do that for 2019 up until 10/15/2020. All right. So if you have a bunch of page two of your schedule E or page one of your schedule, if you have a bunch of real estate income, and you didn't expect to have real estate income, then you may be wanting to look and say, is it possible that I could still do a cost seg? And even if you can't get the cost seg done, you'd use a placeholder number, you'd file your return, and then you'd amend it. Because what we care about is this being made, and then we can always go back and amend as long as you do everything in good faith. Does a single member LLC used for trading qualify for the 199A deduction? David, generally speaking, you'd have to qualify as a trader. And if you did, then there's arguments that you would be able to use the 199A. But to be a trader, I would say at least 700 trades per year. That's like the minimum. And I've seen them deny people for even more trades. They're always trying to find a way to knock you out. So you got to be doing it day in and day out every day. And if you're doing that, then you could qualify as a trader. You'd make a, generally speaking, a mark-to-market election, and you would get your 199A. There's people that believe that. I don't think I've seen any guidance on it, because you'd be a trader business and you would fall under 199A. A better option is, I tend to avoid trader status. I don't worry about the 199A so much on securities. What I do is I do a partnership. So I'll do an LLC tax as a partnership with the corporation acting as the manager and the partner that is getting a guaranteed payment. And that would lower your taxable income. So it takes it off the top. And that's just me. So I tend to do that. Can you describe what the best strategy is for selling employee stock purchase plan shares obtained at a discounted rate? Do you always wait for it to be considered a qualifying disposition, or you do that only when the stock has gone up in value during the purchasing term? So here we go. So let's say we will call this date A, and this is the date that they give you a option basically to start buying shares. And on that day, the stock is $20. And they say you can buy it at any time and you get a discount of 15%. So you have to buy it during this term. And this term is going to be all the way up until where you buy it. And let's say that on the date that you buy it, it's now worth $25, but you can buy it at that discount, which means you're buying it at what, $3 less, so $17. I think that's right. So you're buying at $17 a share. So you're pretty good. Then you hold it up until C. And C is going to be this determinative date. And let's say it's at $30 when you sell it on date C. Now we have to unpack this thing and figure out, all right, what did I get? What's my benefit? Well, what we know for sure is that your employer gave you 15%. So we know that 15% or $3 was what they gave you. So we know for sure you're going to have to pay ordinary income tax when you sell on $3. Now, the next question is, do I have long-term capital gains? And that's where you get into this qualifying disposition question. If this period between A and C is 2 years, and this from B to C is 1 year plus, I should say 2 years plus, 1 year plus, then the entire amount of gain from that, what would end up being your basis, would be the $17 plus three, or the 20. Your entire gain of $10 would be long-term capital gains. Hope that makes sense. If it's less, then bad things happen all over the place. Number one, if it's not, if you don't meet these tests and you sell it within that, you have your $3 that is taxable as ordinary. You also have the difference between the basis and the amount that you picked it up at. This extra $5 would also be ordinary plus five. So you'd have $8 of ordinary at that point. Plus your difference, that extra $10, would also be ordinary. So that would, we'll just lump that all together. And you're going to end up having ordinary tax treatment on $18 versus having $3 and then having $10 of long-term capital gains. Fun stuff. I know that you guys were thinking that somebody says cancel this question. No, this is why you look at it. What ends up coming is people will make this mistake. What they'll do is they'll get a share, they'll get the opportunity to buy something, and they won't realize that when they sell it, let's say that you sold it the day after you exercise this, my rights underneath my employee stock option plan. So I bought it at $17 and it's worth $25 and I sold it. I would have $8 of ordinary income. Some of you guys, that's half the money is gone. The price at B is $25. So they're selling it at $25. So it went up. If it went down, it's not nearly as catastrophic because you're going to have loss, right? You're going to have some capital loss and you're going to have some ordinary income. So, you know, could it be that the ordinary income, the discount, is not quite completely offset? Yeah. But for the most part, you know, what we're looking at is these things are going up. I hope that makes sense to you guys. We see people do this all the time. They get it and they sell it. And then it's like, no. If this thing's going to go up, just chill. Don't, you don't have to cash it out. wait for at least a year, and you need to wait for 2 years from this date, and then you get much better tax treatment. Like this long-term capital gains, this $10 would either be at 0 or 15% on most people, as opposed to 20 some percent. And some of you guys would be 30 some percent. So we end up saving, you know, getting an extra 10-15% on the of return just because we did that. Somebody says we just did this too. We had to. They also took FICA. Yeah, it's treated as ordinary income. So it's wages. So yeah, kind of stinkolas. But sit on it. Sit on it if you can. Sally, I bet you that's probably Johnson & Johnson, right? I don't know why that's popping in my head. All right, so let's see, keep going. Let's see. Is an S Corp the right entity for a syndicate brand capital raising? No. Let me make it simple for you. Roy, the reason that people don't use S Corps on those things is because when you're raising money, you don't know who's going to be buying, and an S Corp has to be a normal person. If it's another S Corp or C Corp or partnership or an LLC, you're going to have an issue. It's going to kill it. So it could be pretty brutal. Let's see. What you're usually going to do is, yeah, somebody says we took some and bought the rest of the share. Yep. Perfect. In the long-term capital gains. All right. So you did that. Great. Saleh. Roy, you're probably going to be doing as an LLC tax as a partnership almost always. And you'll have a management entity that's generally speaking going to be a C Corp. Or if you have partners, it might be an S Corp. Usually it's going to be a corporation of some deal. Hey, you know what? This is funny. I'm talking to Sally. And Sally, I remember from 1999, and we were in Niagara Falls in New York, and you and Ernie were sitting in the front row. Still remember that. It's weird how stuff sticks in your head, isn't it? Yep. Say hey to Ernie for me. Everybody else is going, what the hell is they saying? There was a couple that went to a class, and for whatever reason, do you ever have people that just stick in your head and there they are? And I still remember Sally and her husband sitting in the front seat. Ernie, super nice people too, if you've ever met them. And yeah, they've been with us for a long, long, long time. All right. I made some good money trading cryptocurrency. Congratulations. This puts me in the highest tax bracket. Is there a way to reduce my tax liability? So interesting that you say that. Number one, so crypto is taxed as capital. It's a capital asset. So when you sell it, it's capital gains. Now, I know you say it puts you in the top tax bracket. But that's not necessarily bad because capital gains are taxed if it's long term. And I'm making a big assumption here is long term is 20%. Short term, you're looking at a high of 37%. Is there a way to reduce my bracket? If it's just you, then we're going to be limited. And what we're going to be limited to are itemized deductions, really. Itemized or retirement plans. And you can't do fund a retirement plan with capital gains. So I'm just going to say, if I was lowering your income, I'd be looking at those areas. What I'd be looking at is things that will come off the top are charitable. I might do a conservation easement. And before you guys freak out, they're not bad. There's bad actors in the easements, meaning that there's people that are going 15-1 stuff, but the IRS doesn't get mad as long as you're 4-1 or so. So if you put a dollar in, you're getting a $4 deduction, which is going to pencil out for you to save you some money as opposed to just putting it all. That's still available to you. The other route is you are a spouse qualifying as a real estate professional. That may work, or net operating losses from another business. So Real Estate Pro is a net operating loss, if you know how that works. And so you may be wanting to look at some of these things now. If I had been able to get to you before, and yes, my screen just went black. If I had been able to get to you, then what we do with crypto is I would normally place it into a vehicle like an LLC that is taxed as a partnership, and I would have a corporation acting as the manager. And the reason I do that is because I have a statute telling me I can pay that corporation, and it would be a percentage of the partnership, and I would pay it what's called a guaranteed payment. And that's aside from the percentage that it's going to get, I'm going to have that corporation get X number of dollars. And that way I can move money into the corporation. And the corporation has a flat tax rate of 21%. It also has a ton of tax deductions that are available to me. And at a minimum, it lets me start playing with some tax years. I'd want to make sure I document that and honor it and actually do it when I'm acting as the manager and I'm thinking about things to invest in, I'm going to be wearing my corporation hat. So anyway, that's fun stuff. So there's the crypto. But we want to be able to shave things off ahead of time. If we don't have that, then yes, there's still things we could do. This charitable giving is a huge area, by the way. You can't see me circling because I have a white pen. There we go. The charitable giving, that's a conservation easement. But the charitable giving, I can go up to 100% of my AGI. And I can give and lower it 30% if I give appreciated capital assets. So if I give it cryptocurrency, I could actually shave off 30% of my income. If I'm in the highest tax bracket, that means for every dollar of crypto, even if I haven't sold the crypto, I'm just sitting on it and I transfer it to my charity. So I open up a Coinbase account in the charity and I transfer over a bunch of my shares, or excuse me, a bunch of my crypto, a bunch of my coins. I would get whatever that value is. I would take a snapshot of what that value is on that day on a publicly traded platform. And I could offset for every dollar I'm getting 37 cents in my pocket of tax savings. So I might do that and let the charity sell it. Now, is it gone? Yeah, it's not yours anymore. It's the charity's, but at least I'm still in control of it. I can direct where it's going. If I have a foundation, I have to spend what, 5%, 10% on the 5% on the giving it to other 501c3s. But most of my clients set up their own charities. Like they're actually operating it as something. Low-income housing, sports leagues, education, you name it, health, all those things are charitable activities if you want to put it in. Then we could really start saving off some taxes. We can give it, you know, houses and other things too. So it works really, really well. Somebody says, what method of accounting do you recommend to C-Corp cash unless you're over 5 million and maybe then you go to accrual? Sometimes you're required to. Let's keep jumping on. Actually, somebody asked a question on the manager. Can I also be the manager of the LLC for trading or the C-Corp? You'd want to be acting through a C-Corp. You do not qualify because you need to have a trader business in this mix. And if you're doing stock trading, they don't know when it's a trader business. They call it trader status, but it's all over the map. I don't want to mess with that. I know what a management company is because it's managing other assets and I don't have to worry about being a trader business. It's so easy because there's lots of managers out there of assets. It's pretty easy. I just put my manager hat on and I grow my and run my businesses. Let's see. Can I get a $500,000 capital gain exclusion on the sale of my residence if I am single when I occupied it, but I'm married when I sell it? So the answer is maybe. What matters, they're going to assume that you're both owners of it when you sell because you're married. But the question is, did your spouse live in it two of the last 5 years as their primary residence? If they did, then yes, you could actually get both. And so they always look at it and say, all right, did you guys own it? And did you occupy it as your personal residence two of the previous 5 years? So it gets kind of fun. It's even weirder when people retire or not retire, when they divorce and figuring out how the exclusion works because somebody's not living there anymore, but you have a spouse that sells it and they look at it and say, hey, wait a second. There was two of us as the owner and the IRS will treat it if it's done correctly as though you guys both owned it when you sell. And then the only question is, did they live in it two of the last 5 years? So you can get the full exclusion. And you would each get the 250, I believe, if you were divorced. And you get the 500,000 if you and your daughter lived in it. No, you would get, if you guys owned it together, you would each get, I believe, 250, I believe. I haven't looked at that, but more than likely, it sounds like you own it and your daughter live with you. It would be a $250,000 exclusion. If you want to avoid, and I'll get into this when we go over that portion. There's ways to avoid tax on the sale of a house, personal residence, without using 121. I am a limited partner investor in a hedge fund through a Wyoming holding company. How can I deduct the management fees? This is where it gets real. This is the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And they did away with miscellaneous itemized deductions. And so I'm going to write it out and then I'm just going to put a big X through it. They're gone. So if I'm a limited partner investor in a hedge fund, then the only way you're going to be able to deduct the management fees is if they paid a general partner fees. And that manager, that management entity covered all the management fees. In which case, the way it works is this. I'll show you guys the difference. No GP or with a GP. And this works when you're an LLC with a manager, just since this is a limited partnership. So there's just no manager. You just have a regular management company and you're itemizing. Then if you make $100,000 and you have $10,000 of management fees, you cannot deduct the $10,000. So you pay tax on the full $100,000. When you have a GP, before it hits your K-1, you have $100,000, but you have $10,000 of management expense, guaranteed payment to partner, that's going to that general partner, which means you have $90,000 flowing through on your K-1. So you'd only pay tax on $90,000. You see, that little difference makes a big, that little thing makes a pretty big difference on an annual basis. So if it's me and I have this happening and I have a limited partner and I have a holding company and they're not doing this, then I might be looking at whether there's a workaround. And the workaround might be, so I have a limited partnership. I hold mine through an LLC and it has my interest. So the money's flowing in there and then it comes out to me. I might make sure that there's a corporation up here acting as a manager of my LLC. And I might be shaving some of the money off here so it doesn't hit me all at one shot. I don't believe that you'd be able to go back and reimburse yourself expenses. I don't think so. I'm just thinking off the top of my head. I think that the ship has sailed. So what some hedge funds are doing is they're doing carried interest, which in theory is not a management fee. And they're just saying, hey, we're going to do more carried interest and we're going to pay all of our management fees out of the carried interest. If you don't know what carried interest is, it's like a success fee. And they're not really a fee. They get an interest in its long-term capital gains tool. And that's why they do it. So they're not having to pay ordinary income. Hope that helps. I know it's a little bit deep. If I want to trade through a Florida LLC as a single member, should I have it taxed as a C corp? Ron, if it's an LLC, and I would generally have the LLC in Florida be a partnership with a corporation acting as one of the partners, or I'd do it as an S corp more than likely. If I don't want any of the money and I just want to trade in it and use it for expenses and I'm going to zero it out, then a C corp would work. You actually have multiple choices. Don't you love that depends type of answer? I wish it was cleaner than that, but that's really it. Your facts and circumstances always change everything. If a homeowner living in her main residence also has another family member paying her rent, which she reports as rental income, can she take the $250 when selling the house? Yes. And you could 1031 exchange the other half. I'll show you how this works. Actually, one of our questions is almost that precise situation. I'll get to it here in a second. Right now, all of my staff is sweating. They wanted to be done at 4. And in any case, they're all going to freak out if we go to 5. So I'm going to try to be a little bit brief just because I like to watch them all squirm. If I could see them right now, they're all squirming because I'm known to be, sometimes I end way early. You guys know that, right? Not. Okay, my wife and I have W-2 jobs and are renting out 3 properties. So they have 3 rental properties. And so you have property 1, 2, 3. So we have 3 rental properties. But what if we form a C-Corp to manage these? Can I get a tax benefit? It depends. The C-Corp more than likely is going to have like, you get an accountable plan so you can do health, vision, all that. Let's see, what are medical, dental, vision. There we go. Medical, dental, vision, or health, vision, dental. You can do all those reimbursements. You can do 280A. You can do an administrative office. You can do reimbursement of mileage if it's not otherwise available to you, if you're managing those. But yes, there's some benefits there. But the thing that really caught my eye is this W-2 job and become a real estate professional. It depends on how much tax losses we can generate. So let's just say that we're zeroing these out and we have zero income. We have zero. So our situation is we have zero income. And when I say income, I mean net income. Then all we're going to do is we're going to create a little bit of a loss if we use the C-Corp. And depending on how much you make, will dictate whether or not you can write off all of that. Let's say that you make $100,000 a year between you and your spouse, and you end up with a $10,000 loss because we did the C-Corp. You can actually write that off. It's called an active participation. You can write off up to $25,000. If you're making over $150,000, that goes away, and then you'd have to do the real estate professional. But again, it comes down to whether there's net income, and then what your income is, because these guys could create losses. And if you're a real estate professional, then those losses can offset your W-2 income. So it gets funny. Yeah, administrative expense, office supplies, all that comes into it. So it's called an accountable plan, and it just means I reimburse anything that's out of pocket that an employee spends for the benefit of the corporation. So if the employee drives, I reimburse you mileage. If the employee has to have a cell phone, then it reimburses you for the cell phone. If it's using an office in your home, then I reimburse you for the office. It's not a home office deduction. It's called an administrative office in the house, and I don't have to report it. And the company gets a deduction. It's actually quite potent. And if you like that sort of stuff, that's where you go to the tax toolbox and look at all the cool stuff you can write off. I know you guys all love deductions. New real estate professional, can I deduct the cost of the training in my corp? Yeah, for the most part, if it's real estate related, yeah, that's why we do it. Anyway, we're just going to keep jumping. Let me see if I make sure. Oh, the real estate professional, then the losses can offset W-2. So this is what I love to see. And I'll give you guys a scenario. What I love to see is spouse one, big, you know, let's just say 500,000 and above. Actually, we'll use Biden's number. So 400,000 above. They're a rich person, right? And spouse two, maybe they're making, let's just say that they're making 200,000. So between the two of them, we're at 600,000. And then you have a bunch of real estate and they've been acquiring real estate. And let's say they have, let's just say 2 million in real estate. We don't care how many properties it is. We'll just say it's 2 million. And it's pretty much breaking even every year. So this extra 200,000, they're donating more than 30 some percent of that, or, you know, 60 to 70K in taxes on that. And it's not so good. And you're like, oh man. So at the end of the day, really what you're getting back on this is you're going to get, let's just say X dollars. I'm just going to say X dollars. I'm not going to try to add, but let's just figure that on this alone, I'm getting to keep maybe $130,000 of it when it's all said and done. But what if spouse two cuts back their time and says, you know what, I'm only going to work part-time and I'm going to reduce my pay now to $100,000 a year. I'm working part-time. That's still a pretty good part-time job, right? But you guys get the idea. Then I qualify as a real estate professional, which is 750 hours and more than 50%. So if I am spending 750 hours here, I would need to spend 751 hours on real estate. I have to beat that 750 hours. If I spend 1,000 hours, I need to spend 1,001 hours. But what it does is it unlocks this $2 million of depreciation and makes losses, net operating losses. And so let's just do some math here. Let's say that $2 million, I'm able to generate a $300,000 first year deduction, which is nothing. It's actually going to be closer to, but let's just say it's 300,000. What I'd be able to do is offset in this particular case, I did 400,000 plus 100,000, which is $500,000 minus 300,000. So I'm going to end up paying tax on $200,000 as opposed to ordinarily, I was paying tax on 600,000. Make sense? So how much money did I actually get to keep? I kept my full 500,000. How much money would I get to keep if I made 600,000? I'd probably get to keep about 450,000 of it. So working less paid me more. Those are the fun examples. And if you're wondering whether that's your situation, I know some of you guys, I may have lost a little bit, but that's why we get in and we pencil these things out. But it's fun. All right, let's keep jumping through. I know I went a little long. Would the capital gains exclusion apply to, and this is the capital gains exclusion. I'm just going to write the code number. This is 121, so 26 USC 121. Would the capital gains exclusion apply to a two-unit property where one unit is rented and the other unit we lived in? So when you say we lived in, that's telling me that it's married filing jointly. For purposes of this question, say the property was purchased for $500,000 and is now valued around 2.5. If we sell the property without paying capital gains, and how? So this gets interesting. They would get a $500,000 exclusion of capital gains for their portion of that property that they lived in as a primary residence. So let's say that right now, their portion, let's just call it 50-50. Then the way it would work is their basis in each half would be 250. You get it? 250,000, because they would split the basis. And let's say we sold it, they'd have 1.25 million. So if they sold it for the 2.5, then the way it would work is we'd take the 1.0, their half, 1.25 minus we don't have to worry about their basis. So the 0.25 comes off the top. So we're down to 1 million. and we would subtract off of that their 500,000, which would equal $500,000 of capital gains. Depending on where they live, that could be a pretty hefty chunk. That's going to be, you know, 20% at least, probably a little more, right? So that's what we're looking at on that half. On the other half, because remember, it's 2.5, it's 1.25 minus 2.5. So they're going to have $1 million of gain. So they're going to have a total amount of gain of 1.5. Now, there's depreciation recapture if they rented out a portion as well. But I'm not going to dink around with that. That's going to be 25% tops. It's going to be your ordinary bracket. So chances are it's going to be 25%. But let's just look at that. We're looking at 1.5 million. So that's not a small amount. We're looking at several hundreds of thousands of dollars of tax. Now I'll show you how to avoid it. The easiest way is for you to move out. And remember that this is two of last five. It's not last two. It's two of last five. So all I have to do is, if I move out, is make sure that I sell it within 5 years and I can still use my exclusion. So what I would do is I would move out and I would bring in another tenant for the half, and I might rent to them for 6 months. Now, the entire thing could be 1031. And the way it works is I could sell this for 2.5 and I could roll that into other real estate. And before you guys get all crazy on me and say, but I want a house to live in, I get it. You can do that. I roll this into investment property. It just has to be more real estate, and it could be one, it could be two, it could be three houses, it could be an apartment, it could be land, it could be whatever. I can move into whatever I buy. I would rent it for about 6 months and then move into it. And the code does contemplate it. It literally talks about 1031 exchanges in section 121. You have to wait 5 years before you can sell again instead of two as ordinary. So it contemplates this. But what would happen is I use up my 121 exclusion and it gets added to basis of the property. So what would end up happening is, let's say I sold it. Let's see if you guys can follow me here. So I rent it, and I'm just going to put this up on the screen. So remember, our basis was 500,000. We sell for 2.5. We have recapture, and so we have a recapture that we have to worry about, and gain. Those are our two things that we're worried about. What ends up happening is, if I 121, then I have an exclusion of $500,000. My 121 is I lived in it two of the last 5 years. So the first thing we do is we go up to the basis and we add 500,000 to it. Now what's my basis? 1 million. And I 1031 exchange the recapture and the other gain, which means I'm going to buy another property at 2.5 million. I'm going to buy other property or other properties, and I will pay how much tax? Zero. And my new basis will now be 1 million basis. And assuming that the law stays the way it is now, all you'd ever have to do is die at some point, the basis will step up and nobody will ever pay tax on that transaction. But regardless, I managed to get double my basis. And if I buy another property, as long as I'm buying investment property, so let's say that I buy the house of my dreams for 2.5 million and I buy it and it's 2.5 million, rent it out. There's not even a technical requirement that they occupy it, but I'm not going to, like, there's cases on this stuff. You have to show good faith estimate, but I would just have somebody live in it that you know, rent it to them for 6 months. And that's just a safe harbor. And then move into it. So the question is it worth $300,000 to do, you know, $400,000, whatever it ends up being, depending on your tax bracket, but a minimum of 1.5 million, a minimum of $300,000, would it be worth it doing this? You know? Yeah, absolutely. What would I do? I'd probably rent an RV and go drive around the country and say, I just saved $300,000. I deserve my vacation. Hope that makes sense for you guys. If you guys like this stuff, I do, then by all means, jump on and listen to some of our other podcasts. AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. They're all free. Love giving this stuff. You can always go in and watch the replays in the portal, but you'll see that we have tons of stuff coming out. I just did a really cool podcast with Eric Dodds today. I've talked to so many cool people. I'm going to be doing a podcast here coming up with some pretty cool investment bankers that get into all the cool stocks before they ever go public, you know, things like that. There's just cool stuff that's always, I enjoy this stuff and hopefully you do too. Somebody says, when creating the Wyoming LLC, is it manager managed or member managed? I would make it manager managed. In the examples I was giving you, I want to have a manager be entitled to compensation and make that manager somebody other than myself, have it be a corporation. Can you deduct holding expenses on two properties waiting to be renovated? They are not rented against the profit made on three-year-old flip on three sold flip properties? Yeah, of course you can. What you have is you have not so much like the holding expenses is a true expense, but if you're adding it to the, if you're improving the property, then it's added to its basis. And it's kind of like running a, what you're really talking about is running a mini mart where you, instead of selling Cheerios, you're selling houses. A better example is like a car lot. You have a bunch of cars on the lot and you sold three and you have some expenses. Can I use the profits from the three cars I sold to cover those expenses? Yes, you can. If I get $1 million gain is 50% of my company sale, $500,000 rolled over equity, company by PEP takes debt to buy my company, $1 million long-term, even though the retained equity, I'm not following what you're talking about. I thought I'd be able to answer one last one. Somebody says, I made a charitable deduction by paying with the credit card associated with my single member LLC. Am I able to declare this on my Schedule A without exposing myself to veil piercing? Yeah, as long as you document it, you can absolutely do that. And by the way, you could actually do it through the LLC. And since it's disregarded, it just flows, it's treated as your charitable donation. So you don't even have to worry about it. It's not going to pierce anything. You must be a really good person, Rob, if you're using credit to make the contributions to charity. I get why you're doing it. You're probably like, I want the deduction now, and then I'll pay for it over time. Good person. You can never give until it hurts, right? And then use the points too. Like, make sure you're getting using. Shouldn't say stuff like that. All right, Google. There's the podcaster in iTunes and also on Google Play. You can go in there and see what we got. There's always stuff. And then, of course, you can always go onto social media and check us out. Yeah, somebody says it's for the points. You are my kind of guy, Rob. All right. So Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter. We do the Tax Tuesday every 2 weeks. Tax deadline is in 2 days. That's why Jeff didn't join us. He didn't really lose his mind. I just said, Jeff, don't even sweat it. I can talk to myself for several hours without even breaking a sweat, but I would be happy to do this. If you have questions, email us. We're getting a lot of them. I know our guys are pretty good about getting back. Some of them, they probably push on me to select, and hopefully that we're getting through a lot of those. Somebody says, how can you claim title in Pennsylvania because land trust does not cover it? You would title it directly in the land trust. Otherwise, it's treated as a taxable event. The only, like, we used to do a living trust and then convert it to a land trust. So we draft it as a living trust. Pennsylvania is just so tough to deal with. I actually was born there, just outside of Philadelphia in media. Some of you guys know that's where I grew up. So fly, Eagles, fly. Now I have the Raiders here in Las Vegas. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe they took out the Chiefs. It's kind of wild. For those of you who are still watching football in this day and age. Anyway, Tax Tuesday at AndersonAdvisors.com or visit us on Anderson Advisors. Always love doing these. So shoot us a question and we might grab it and put it up there. If you didn't, if for whatever reason you're not getting an answer to your questions, by all means, feel free to reach out and poke us in the forehead. We have hundreds of questions that come in each week. And as you guys know, we're not getting paid to do it. We're just doing it because, frankly, there's too much hide the ball these days. Somebody's saying, go Packers. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So we just try to get through as many as we can. And I think that we're getting through them all. But just in case, if you ever feel like we're not paying enough attention to you, by all means, reach out. We tend to try to, you know, we want to make sure that we're getting you the information that you can. If it is really personal and you're just, you know, you're just trying to get free advice on a continuous basis, we're probably going to say you got to become a client. But otherwise, we do this because we love working with the small business folks. We love working with the investors. And because it's hard enough to do it out there without getting shellacked with the tax stick. So Tax Tuesdays are about helping keep a little bit more in your realm of influence so you can choose what to do with it. And if that means that you're going to give it all away or give it to your kids or give it to your dog, that's your choice. What we're going to do is make sure that you're keeping as much of it as possible so you're able to make that choice. That is it. You guys will see you in 2 weeks for another Tax Tuesday.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at AndersonAdvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.